Okay, folks, I'm just sorry to interrupt you. We're going to make a start. And it's great to see everyone. Has everyone... Oh, no, well, Tim's already asked that question. I was going to ask if everyone's fated. It's quite exciting, isn't it? And as Tim said, we're thinking about the church family. And I just thought I'd start by telling you... A funny story, my kind of family history. It was our first holiday in France as a family, and I was about 7 at the time, and I remember we went to these kind of French campsites. Everyone does these kind of family holidays, don't they, from time to time. And we were on this French campsite, and my dad kind of got the kids together and said, "Now, listen, Sam, there's something that you need to know about French toilets." Okay, all three of us were there, and he said, "Now listen, it's not all that complicated, but the only thing to realise is they don't always have a seat, and so sometimes you just kind of go in and you kind of got to squat." I won't demonstrate it now, but you get the picture, and you have to get on with it. Now, as a 7-year-old boy, I was incredibly excited by the prospect of new interesting toilets. So the first thing I did that evening on this campsite, we were going for a little family walk around the little town that we were staying in. So the first thing I did on the way to that was to go to the toilet block. And in I go and find one of these kind of new exciting French loos. And I do my business. And then look around for the flush. I couldn't remember my dad saying that there was anything unusual about the flush. Eventually I found a button on the wall and pressed it. At which point I realised I'd actually walked into a French shower. The shower turned on, and this little 7-year-old English boy in all of his clothes got absolutely drenched and left a little present for the next Frenchman to go in for a shower as well. But it was priceless, because I walked out and my whole family were lined up there waiting for this walk, and as they saw me sopping wet in all of my clothes, well, you can imagine it kind of came out every Christmas for the next 10 years, as sometimes it happens in families, doesn't it? And another little story from our family. I remember when I was about 11, and Dad kind of got the whole family together, and he said, "Now, children, we've got something quite important to tell you. We're moving. This is the first big move for me as a youngster, and we're moving all the way to the other side of the country to Derbyshire." And I remember thinking, "Gosh, that's a long way away. I'm going to leave my school and my friends and all the rest of it." But I had that amazing moment where I realised, so long as I'm with my family, it's going to be okay. For all the new things that are going to happen, we're there as a family, it's going to be okay. And that's the amazing thing about families, isn't it? We all have funny family stories, but at the end of the day, family is a wonderful, wonderful thing. Now, I'm aware that actually I've been very fortunate with my own experiences of family. And not all of us will have had kind of happy family memories, like on the whole I've had. Families can be painful places. They can kind of fall to pieces, can't they? And they can fail to provide the kind of love and security that they should. But sadly, when that happens, don't we all know that it's not meant to? Actually, and if we've experienced that, the reason it's painful is we know families aren't meant to be like that. Families should be the kind of people who are on your side, who know you deeply. You know, they know the kind of little things that are going to wind you up, and actually will probably therefore do those things from time to time. And they know how you're going to react to certain things. Family should be a place of laughter and safety, and above all, love. That's what we all know deep down. And today we're going to be seeing that when Jesus calls us to follow him, he invites us into a wonderful new family. It's a family known as the church. Now, I'm sure that we all have our own kind of ideas or preconceptions, if you like, about what church is. What I want us to see today is that when the Bible talks about church, it talks about family. Church means family when the Bible talks in that way. And I think understanding that, and that's what I want us to see today, will really change how we view church and our own involvement in church. So first then, we're going to see the promise of a new family. And do turn to Mark's Gospel with me. It's on... did I put a page number on the thing? Yes, I did. Page 1005. Okay, I'm going to read Mark chapter 3, verses 31 to 35. Then Jesus' mother and brothers arrived. Standing outside, they sent someone in to call him. A crowd was sitting around him, and they told him, "Your mother and brothers are outside looking for you." "Who are my mother and my brothers?" Jesus asked. Then he looked at those seated in a circle around him and said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does God's will is my mother and my brother and sister and mother." Now, in Jesus' day, family was one of the most important things. Everything in life was oriented around your family. Often there'd be kind of family businesses that would work together. Certainly, they'd all live in the same town and area. And that's what makes what Jesus says here so shocking. Verse 34. "Here are my mother and my brothers," he says to this little group of followers around him. Now, it's worth saying he's not having a go at his own family here. That's not the point. No, the point is he's saying that if people follow him, he's creating a new kind of family. The kind of family that has the same extraordinary closeness of the human families that we know ourselves. And you see in verse 35, it's a bond that's created by God. So when we trust Jesus and start going God's way, well, we're brought into the closest possible family, says Jesus. Relationships with other people who are doing the same thing, following Jesus and seeking to go God's way. So it's the closest possible family, but it's also much larger than a normal nuclear family. And just flick across a few pages to Mark chapter 10. And I think this would be probably a familiar passage to many of us from Christianity Explored. Does anyone here have a particularly large extended family? How many?
I've got no idea, but one.
Wow, so many that you can't even count them. It's always slightly awkward, isn't it, when you go to weddings and one family has like four members of family and the other has about 500 or something. You get the two sides of the church. I don't think they normally do it when that's the case. But Jesus goes on to promise here that this new family that he promises to bring us into is going to be much larger than even the largest of extended families. He's just been explaining that there might be a cost to following him. It'll involve kind of giving certain things up. And let's pick it up from verse 28. So Peter says, "We've left everything to follow you." "I tell you the truth," Jesus replied, "no one who has left home or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for me and the gospel," so they're things that perhaps we might have to give up if we trust Jesus, things that relationships that might not work out. And yet he says the promise, "You won't fail to receive 100 times as much in this present age. Homes, brothers, sisters, mothers, children and field, and with them persecutions, and in the age to come, eternal life." Now, I remember a lovely couple who were married too late to have kids. I knew them when I worked up in Leicestershire. And do you know what they said to me, though? They said, "Oh, we married too late to have kids, but the Lord has given us hundreds of children." And that was true, that all the kids in that local church, they were like the ultimate kind of extra mother and father to them. And that's the same actually for all of us in a church family. So here we all are tonight, and if we're trusting Jesus, we're brothers and sisters, the Bible tells us. Now that would make a pretty big family, wouldn't it? But actually this group here is just a very small group compared to the whole church family at St. Mary's. St. Mary's is just a very small church compared to the global group of people following Jesus. It's a wonderful privilege to have this closeness of relationship with so many people. And actually seeing church as family in this way that Jesus encourages us to will really change, I think, how we view church. And I've got a little kind of crib sheet for us just across the page that I thought we'd just quickly work through. So it's possible to think of church as kind of a building that I visit, and you often say, well, that's a pretty church over there, don't you? Kind of, and you're not talking about the people so much, but the architecture. Now, if that's what we think about church, well, we'll care more about the aesthetics of the meeting place. Actually, the people will be neither here nor there. Another view we can have is church is a meeting that I attend. This is perhaps a little bit more common. And so I see as church, as that's something that happens from 11 o'clock on a Sunday morning or 6:30 on a Sunday evening. Now, how do I know if this is how I'm viewing church? Well, here are some of the giveaways. We'll just kind of passively turn up and sit through it and maybe not really engage with other people because, well, it's just a meeting that I attend. And so it doesn't matter if I arrive late or leave straight away at the end. That's church. I've kind of done church if I go to the meeting. Some of us might see it as a duty, though, that we perform. And so church is something that kind of good Christians do. And perhaps we'll be dutiful in going along, but actually there won't be much joy in it. And, it's a duty, so whenever there's something else going on, well, we won't be too worried about missing it or whatever. And actually, church is essentially then about me doing something for God. It's not about the people around us in any way. And so you get people sitting stony-faced in their pews, again, not engaging with people at all. But you see, as soon as you start seeing church as a family who you belong to, well, it changes everything. I've just put a few implications here. There'd be many, many more. It might mean that we arrive in good time and stick around after the service, because actually we know engaging with people and relating to people is really what it's all about. It might mean that we make the most of kind of midweek stuff. That's great to see such a good crowd along here this evening. And we'll take any other opportunity to deepen our relationships. I think it'll also mean we'll want to pursue relationships with my church family outside the kind of structured things that the church lays on. And of course it'll mean coming on a Sunday is going to be a top priority because, well, we want to be committed to the people. And church therefore is no longer just about my convenience or how I happen to be feeling on any particular Sunday or meeting my needs. It's actually about being there for other people, for my family. Doesn't it change your view of church so much when we see church as a family that Jesus calls us to belong to? So that's the first big thing we're going to see. Here's the second though. We're going to have a little kind of family snapshot. Family photos are excruciating, aren't they? I remember having to do them as a kid. But here we get a lovely little family photo of the very earliest church. It's in the book of Acts, so do turn across to it with me. Acts chapter 2. And I'm going to read verse 42 to 47. This is the first group of Christian believers ever recorded. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as he had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favour of all the people. And the Lord added to their number that daily those who were being saved. Did you ever have to go to those kind of extended family get-togethers as a kid? I had to go to them. And you'd be sitting next to Aunt Agatha and desperately trying to make polite conversation. And the kind of general atmosphere was, well, let's just say, fairly dull. And yet here, how would you describe the general atmosphere of this family get together? Well, I don't know what words you'd use. I think I'd probably go for words like joyful, glad, praise. It's amazing, isn't it, as they get together. That's the kind of vibe in this family. What is it that makes it, though? Four key ingredients that we see here. They're learning God's ways together. Do you see that in verse 42? They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching. In other words, they had a real hunger to learn. You see, God had called them to be his people, and now they wanted to know how to follow him. Today, of course, the apostles' teaching is found in the Bible. That's where it's recorded for us. And so we need to be developing a real hunger to learn from the Bible together. Not to assume, rather proudly, that we already know God's ways, but to keep the Bible central in every aspect of church life. Whether that's on a Sunday as we preach through books of the Bible, or midweek here at Thursday evenings, or in our growth groups. The Bible is central because that's what we gather around as we learn God's ways together. That's why I love Bible studies, by the way, because actually we're interacting together, trying to learn God's ways together. It's a wonderful thing to be doing. So that was the first little ingredient. Here's the second, remembering Christ's death together. Again, verse 42, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread. Now, Jesus had said that as a family, we were never to forget his death for us on the cross. And so he told us to break bread and to drink wine together as a way of kind of remembering that. And so communion, as we call it today, or the Lord's Supper, is a family meal. It's something that we do together. And as perhaps on a Sunday at St. Mary's, we have communion. Actually, we're to be looking around at all the other people there, and we're to be thinking, oh, look, Sally and Fred and James and Naomi, Jesus died for them as well. And that's the thing, actually, that holds us together as a family now. And it's a wonderful thing to do together. And so they remember Christ's death together. Thirdly, they pray to their Father together. Again, verse 42, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Do you remember when Jesus taught his disciples to pray? Well, how did it start? My Father. No, our Father who art in heaven. You see, he brings us together as a family, and now we relate together to the Father who we share as a family. And that's why, actually, as we pray together as Christian believers, often it's the closest expression of family, because together we're coming before our shared Father, who we all love. And that's why, actually, we call our monthly prayer meetings at St. Mary's, we call them St. Mary's Evening, because we're wanting to say, actually, this is a family get-together. It's a key thing that we do as a family. And I think it's worth saying, actually, of all our meetings at St. Mary's, the St. Mary's evening has probably the closest sense of family out of all of them. And I think that's because praying to our Father really brings us together. That's worth saying, by the way, there's never any need for people to pray out loud. It's not a particularly scary meeting. And so if you've never given a go before, well, why not come this time next week and see what it's like? It's a wonderful thing. And they certainly did it here. Fourthly, though, as we finish this little section, do you see they shared their lives together? Verse 44, all the believers were together and had everything in common. Selling their possessions and goods, they gave to everyone as he had need. Now, it's worth saying, this isn't a kind of early communist manifesto, okay? Communism is a program. It's dictated by a state from above. That's kind of how it works. This couldn't be more different. It's simply a spontaneous desire to meet each other's needs. No one's directing this from above. In fact, it's just what families do when they love each other. When someone's in need, well, they look out for them. Now, of course, it requires that we actually know each other well enough to know what our needs are. That's a bit of a challenge, perhaps. And you know, this family was so different to the world around as it started way back here in Acts, that when people saw it, they were astounded. And it was one of the key things that led to more and more people wanting to find out about Jesus. Do you see that at the end of verse 47? The Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. And I think in our own world, as society kind of slightly crumbles and breaks to pieces, we can be this kind of family together, well, it's a very compelling picture of all that Jesus can do. So what a great family photo. And it encourages us to think, how does my church family measure up to this snapshot that we're given in Acts? And how does my own attitude to church kind of measure up to it as well? So that's a picture of church. More briefly, just as we finish then, the purpose of our new family. And just turn over to our last passage today, which is Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10, and we're just going to read verse 23 to 25. And see if you can pick up what the purpose of our new family is as I read these verses. Page 1208 in my Bible. Let us hold unswervingly to the hope we profess, for he who promises is faithful. And let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. My brother-in-law got me this book for Christmas. It's, you can see how thick it is. It's called The Law of Running, and he knows I'm a keen runner. And I have to confess, I've read the introduction so far, which is about that much. But in the introduction, Tim Noakes, or whoever he is, says that running is really the ultimate individual sport. Even when you're in a team, really, you're running for yourself. So take the marathon last week down in London. Really, it's totally up to you. Doesn't matter how well everyone else does around you. If you don't get the time, you've only got yourself to blame. No one can help you. It's just you and the race. That's running. That's one of the reasons I like it. But when I was at college, I used to row. And I used to row an eight. And it's basically completely the opposite of running in that respect. You've got nine people in an eight who are totally, and Phil will know about this, but who are, and Renee as well, who are, and anyone else, Ray? Sorry, I don't want to leave anyone out here. But you get the picture. You're totally dependent on each other when you row. You have to kind of work together, pull your weight at the same time, encourage each other. If you get to the end of the race, it's not as an individual, it's as a team. You couldn't have done it by yourself. You needed each other. Now, the Christian life is often referred to as a race. Because of Jesus' rescue, all those who trust in him are heading for heaven. As you see that, just in our verses there, verse 25, right at the end, it says, all the more as you see the day approaching. That's the day that Christians are heading towards heaven. And getting there is often described as a race that we have to run. Well, what are we doing in that race? See verse 23. We're to hold unswervingly to the hope we profess. Keep holding on to Jesus, in other words. And like any race, it'll be tough. There'll be lots of things in life that try and kind of knock us off course and try and take us away from Jesus. But the thing that this writer really wants us to get about this race is that it isn't like running a solo marathon. It's like being in a rowing boat. You see that in verse 24 and 25. Let us consider how we may spur one another on towards love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. You see, we're in this race together, and we need each other to keep going, to spur each other on. And we're not meant to go it alone. And just two quick implications of that as we finish. The first is we need to make meeting together a real priority. That's what it says in verse 25. Let us not give up meeting together. There was an old Scottish minister who one of his parish, one of his kind of parishioners hadn't come to church for a little while, so he invited him round to his house, and they sat in front of the old coal fire, and the minister was trying to encourage him, and he said, you see that fire there, see how the coals burn bright, and there they were kind of blazing away orange. He then got his tongs and he took one of the coals out of the fire and put it on the hearth. And of course, 2 or 3 minutes later, it wasn't orange anymore. It had died entirely down. He said, see what happens when you take a coal out. He says the same happens for a Christian believer when you take him out of his church family. And that's true, actually. If you remove a Christian from his church or her church family, actually, inevitably, we end up kind of turning away from Jesus and dying down ourselves. And that's why it's great to make a church a top priority. Frankly, friends, the Christian life is hard enough, isn't it? Without also trying to do it without the one big thing God has given us to help us in it, our family. But do you see what it says in the verse? Let us not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing. You see, it's very easy just gradually to get into the habit of not coming along to church. Perhaps it starts with a busy patch, and then, well, you know, it gets to a point where we could come, but, well, it's been such a busy week. And then, of course, once you've not been for a couple of weeks, well, it just doesn't quite feel the same, does it? You haven't seen people for a little while, you're worried it might be a bit awkward chatting to people and so on, and say, well, it's just a bit easier to stay at home. And before you know it, well, not meeting together has become a bit of a habit. So meeting with your local church family needs to be a top priority if we're following Jesus for our sake and also for the sake of our brothers and sisters who we're there to encourage. But when we do meet, do you see what we're meant to be doing? Not just kind of hanging out making small talk. Verse 24, let us consider how we may spur one another on. So we're to spur one another on. In other words, church isn't just about me, but it's about thinking, how can I help others today? And of course, that's not just talking about the weather, but actually helping each other to keep following Jesus. And do you see how it says in verse 24, we're to consider how we may do this. In other words, to actually think it through. It requires knowing each other well enough so that we can encourage each other in that. Now, of course, in a big church like St. Mary's, that's why we try and have smaller groups, so we can actually relate to each other on a slightly deeper level. And it's worth saying also that those small groups must never be a kind of substitute for our Sunday. Actually, it's meant to be something that bolsters that, so that you have a chat on a Thursday night and actually then someone can follow it up on a Sunday. And it's so encouraging to see someone again and for them to have remembered some of the things that you're going through at the moment. That kind of consistency is a great show of care, actually, for each other. And it can be really discouraging if someone in our church family, someone in our small group just doesn't show up for a couple of weeks with no word at all. So there we are, our brand new family that Jesus gives us. Of course, all this talk of family, perhaps we might be thinking, well, to be honest, my experience is it doesn't always feel much like this kind of family. And I think there could be a few reasons for that. It might be just because we're quite new. And if that's us, well, can I encourage us? Just keep going. Actually, you will get to know more and more people. Might be perhaps because we're quite shy. Just find it hard kind of chatting to people. But again, don't worry, you don't need to get to know everyone at the same time. Why not just start with one or two people? It might be because, frankly, we're just a bit irregular. And of course, if we don't really get relationally kind of plugged in, then church isn't going to feel much like a family to us. But there are lots of opportunities, I hope, at St. Mary's. And actually, if we consistently make the most of those, you'll be amazed how quickly this kind of slightly random bunch of people here start feeling like a really wonderful family to belong to. Well, shall I pray? And then we can head off for our groups. Loving Father, thank you for the family of the church. And please help us to know what it looks like to be that family. Show us in our own lives where perhaps we need to change our attitudes. And Father, please would you help us to be this wonderful picture of a family that you've given us. And we ask it for Jesus' sake. Amen. The only thing to say is that my group are going to go across to the Old Vic, and Callum and Neil's group are going to stay in this room here, and everyone else, I think, knows where they're going. Thank you.